Well, what is this here? I believe we have some Jeff Beck, right?
I do believe. Well, truth, Ryan, truth.
Speaking truth.
You are speaking truth. We have Jeff Beck's Truth album.
Nice.
Good pick, Liz. Well, nice well job. Done. Our random pick for the opener. Yeah, Jeff Beck's Truth. What was it, 69, I think, came out?
Yeah, yeah.
69, I want to say. I may be wrong, but yeah, this is, what, Beck's Bolero?
This is Beck's Bolero.
Yeah.
Classic
fine
record.
Instrumental, yeah.
Love the song.
Beck's Bolero, and then of course, Jethro Tull did Beret. You know, to sort of go with the classical bent.
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
Kind of hip. But yeah, this is the one with Rod Stewart on it.
Yep.
Just great, great.
What can you say? This is an essential Jeff Beck record.
Would you say start here with this one?
Yeah, I would.
I would, too. I'm somehow tangled. There.
Tangled up in truth.
Tangled up in truth. Yeah, Ronnie Wood's on this one. Mickey Waller plays drums. I mean, this is a classic album. You have to have this album if you like the Yardbirds, if you like Rod Stewart. When he went on to do the Rod Stewart thing, he's young and he's raw, man. I mean, just great vocals on this record.
Very
man.
Nice.
Yeah. So
very nice. Well, shall we get cracking here?
Let's get cracking. I love cracking.
All right on.
Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy!
Shabby Road Records Show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Shabby Road Records Show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Laba.
Hey, Laba.
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and I'm joined by a man who's keeping warm through this cold desert night by putting on a few extra layers of Budweiser, A.D. Adams.
Oh, that's right. Speaking of keeping warm, greetings and salutations from the sunny shores of St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. There's a warm tropical breeze blowing on this perfect 80-degree day. Zero humidity. We're on a beautiful white sandy beach, and everywhere you look is gorgeous girls in bikinis, Ryan.
Wow. What are you looking at?
Nah, not really, but wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, it would be nice.
Now look around here.
Wake up.
Why do I torture us like this?
I don't know.
Anyway, nice to be here.
I don't know. We thank you guys very much for hanging out with us here at Shabby Road.
We do.
This week on 117, episode 117.
We're teenagers all over again.
Oh, 17. Yay. It was a very good episode.
When we were 17, it was a very good show.
And doing all the things that you guys do, you know, hitting us up on Facebook and on Twitter, and also leaving iTunes reviews, sharing everything with a friend. That's all just fantastic. And we appreciate you guys week after week. Thank you very much.
Very much
we really
so.
Appreciate it.
And it's growing by leaps and bounds. That's the
leaps
thing.
And
you're
bounds.
Telling everybody about us, and we do appreciate that, sharing our posts and all that stuff. It goes a long, long way. So thank you for the love.
Let's say hi to Liz Morgan, who's running the controls tonight. Tony on Gun Saluto.
Yay.
What's up, Liz?
Not a thing.
Nice.
It's cold as hell outside.
It is cold here.
Mm-hmm.
She's subbing in for Ricky Serrano, who's on a special mission again. He's super busy opening up a new studio or doing something like that.
It's
crazy over there.
What's going on with you, Ricky?
That's right. Let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at nameonanything.com.
Oh, let's do that, nameonanything.com. Hey. They put your name on freaking, I don't know, anything.
That's right. From the comfort of your own home, you could get some stuff for Aunt Gladys's birthday party, some personalized plates and napkins.
Ooh, yes, indeed.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Aunt Gladys likes her name on stuff. She has a bowling shirt with her name on it.
Picture of her topless or something?
Yeah, absolutely. you've not seen Aunt Gladys topless. As if I have. Well, no, listen, Ryan, let's say you're the dude in charge of the electric chair down at the local pokey, right? And you got some electrocuting to do. Right?
Sure. Okay.
Well, it's a tough business, as everybody knows. And let's say you got a guy in for killing and you got another guy in for jaywalking. How do you tell the difference?
Oh, yeah, true.
Right? Hey, jaywalking guy, they're both going to raise their hands. Nobody wants to go to the chair. Which guy, Ryan? How can you tell them apart? easily. You can get yourself some new prison wear, personalized prison jumpsuits. You can adorn any jailhouse wear with your choice of inmate's name, their prison nickname, if you want to do that. Let's get a little weird.
Oh, boy.
Or the crime they're in for.
Okay.
And that, Ryan, could actually save some lives. And we here down at Shabby Road, that means a lot to us. We're for that. Personalized prison wear. Nameonanything.com.
And you'll save 10% when you use the promo Shabby when you're reaching out to them over there.
And it might just save a life.
Personalize your life over at nameonanything.com. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know what else makes this night a very special one?
Nothing what? Here. What do you got? You gussy this place.
I'm
special
excited.
Up this place. You're pretty magical, mister.
How about I gussy this place up with a six-pack of beer from Thomas Harding?
Hey, oh. Thomas! How about that?
He went to our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com. In the top right-hand corner, you'll see that big frosty mug of beer. And you could use that to fill the fridge here at Shabby Road. Donate a few beers, a few cold ones for us to keep our wheels greased as we unsheath record after record for the next 90 minutes.
And Thomas, I think I'm having my very first ice-cold Dundee's Honey Brown on you. And we thank you for that. Yes. Delicious.
You like that. All right. Speaking of those mystery boxes, AD.
Oh, how's your box?
Oh, this box is incredible. I mean, I'm playing some heavy metal tonight. I'm not fucking around no more. I've been messing around with my horn bands and my Desmond Child.
It's fun to go off there into wherever land, though,
isn't
it? I
do love that. And it really is a window into my psyche. What I'm listening to throughout the week is usually what winds up in the mystery box.
Sure.
But I found a great record at the record store. That'd be the record room that we've been touting for the last few weeks. I found this record that's a classic from my childhood, and I went, oh, totally bringing that. And it was basically the catalyst for the rest of my mystery box, which is dedicated to a college radio show called The Metal Shop that used to run, I believe, on Monday nights on the college radio station in Quincy, Illinois, where I grew up.
No shit.
They had a heavy metal show around 83 or 84.
College in Quincy?
Quincy College.
I didn't know anybody graduated.
No.
They don't graduate in Quincy. We ship them out.
it's called Quincy University now, I think. But I don't know what's happening with it or what you study
moving
there.
Moving on up, yeah.
Yeah, maybe some corn-related things.
Yes.
But
Tilling and hoeing.
Ethanol 101.
Tool and die. Yeah. Tool and die. Shit. So anyway, that's my mystery box tonight. It's nothing but metal. I've got from 1978 through 1984 and three just dynamite heavy metal songs with great stories as per usual. Interested to get into a conversation with you about my middle record.
Cool.
And see where you're at with it and also the legendary story behind it. So
well, that's
should
cool.
be a fun conversation.
Well, if you're coming heavy, I got to say 2 to 3 of mine are pretty fucking heavy.
The third one is
obviously not so heavy. It's a complete – actually, my mystery box by itself, forgetting about comparing it with yours, is a bit psychotic. It's a bit all over the map. I have an iconic singing group from the 60s paying tribute to a recently departed pop star.
Okay.
And so that's one of them. I got to say, all three artists are brand new. I've not played any of these artists. Nobody has played any of these artists
really?
On the show before.
Great. I love that.
I've got another one, and it's a true supergroup, Ryan. I brought a real supergroup this time.
We'll see about that.
Well, yeah. So, and listen, three words, supergroup. I'm telling you, supergroup. And it's so super, we're going to need a blow dryer for this one. This will be the first prop, I think, ever used on a spin at Shabby Road Record Show. I've got a visual demonstration that I think you can help to parlay as I'm demonstrating to our listeners. So I'm going to need help from you guys, but I brought a blow dryer.
Really?
To demonstrate.
Hairband?
Well, let's just ponder that for a while, shall
okay.
we? And my third pick is my newest obsession. You know, I've gone back and I've just stuck myself into the deep, heavy, psychedelic grooves of the late 60s and the early 70s. Mm-hmm. I'm so digging all that, you know, like Chocolate Watch Band and all the heavy organ-driven, organ and guitar-heavy, psychotic fucking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my third pick. So that's what I got. And it's big and it's bombastic and it's damn fun.
Excellent.
Damn fun.
Well, there's nothing left to do now except to pick the cards to see who's going to be the first one to go to take one out of the mystery box.
Yes.
Liz has the two playing cards, a red card and a black card. AD represents the red side of the room. I am the black side of the room. And it's just me and you, AD. You want to pick this time?
Sure. I hope I go second. I don't know where to start with this. I got a great second pick. I don't know if I'm going to
okay.
I'm going to say right hand. Son of a whore.
you jinxed it when you said that.
I did. I mean, my picks are great, but where do I start with one? That's the one I wonder.
Well, you've got to start with one.
I'm just going to start right off the bat with this one. This one is going to be one that you guys are not going to expect coming from me.
Okay.
At all. Ryan, I think, and Liz, I think you're close as far as I think you're going to be slack-jawed.
Okay.
Let me start by saying this. Here's how I'm going to set this up. I'm not a fan of any member in this band. As a matter of fact, I've got a bone to pick to a degree with each of them.
Wow, this is going to be a six-hour segment.
I'm talking about their solo careers. I'm talking about their former bands. And now there are a couple of exceptions, okay? One of the dudes was in another dude's band once, and they were awesome. And then he quit, and he started sucking.
Oh, that's a Mick Ralphs
another dude,
situation
okay.
for you. Keep that company.
Another dude in this band is in a band and still is that used to kick ass, then started sucking. Another dude in this band I really never gave a shit about anyway, but because it's not about him. It's not personal. I just was never into that style or concept of a group or style of music. It never floated my boat. He never sucked, however. He was good, but I just never. Yeah, I never went in there, you know.
I never went in there. One of your films.
Yes. I was completely shaved for that one. Everywhere.
You had to be.
I had a back mustache where most chick stamp tramps are.
Stamps.
Yeah.
Stamp tramps.
Now, the fourth guy in this band, it's a four-man band. The other guy in this band was once in a great band until another member of his band fucked my fucking girlfriend, and then they totally started sucking. That's right,
I'm talking
about Chickenfoot.
What the hell are you doing with Chickenfoot?
I got Chickenfoot, and let me tell you something. I like this album.
You can't.
I like this record.
No, you don't.
I do.
You can't.
I do. I have to. You don't? You like it?
No.
You haven't heard it?
You hate Sammy Hagar.
I do hate Sammy Hagar. Here's the rundown. Let me give you the rundown now.
All right. And
I'll give you my reasons. I had a little spiel here. But I'll give you my rundown. Since I just went down my why not rundown, I'll give you my why rundown. After listening to this double album, I got it for $10 at the record room. I'm like, you know.
So they only paid you $10 to take that out of the record store?
Yes, exactly. And I fought my way out of that place. But so
it has its moments.
It's exactly right. I'm not going to sit here and say this is, you know, as good as Physical Graffiti. I'm not going to sit here and say it's good as anything. Listen, here's what. Okay, let me run that back down. Now, I said one guy was in another dude's band and was once awesome, then went solo and started sucking. I'm talking about,
Sammy
of course,
Hagar.
Sammy Hagar when he was in Montrose.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, the 55 thing and all that, I was done. And then Van Halen, come on, really? You know? And so I never gave him another shot. But now his voice on this record, first of all, there aren't any, not one, 55 moment. There's none.
Just for the record, you hate that 55 lyric in that song. It's grating on you.
The most annoying, however many seconds that is in the history of music biz to me. I can't. It's not like fingernails on a chalkboard. It's like rubbing your teeth on a chalkboard.
As a quick sidebar, how many Tiny Tim records do you own?
Like 3.
Anyway, proceed, sir.
I'm not sure what you're trying to do here to my client.
Just saying.
But on this record, he doesn't have any of those moments. He doesn't try to hit the shit he can't hit. And as a matter of fact, in my opinion, there are times when old Haggard Hagar, his old voice sounds a bit like a young, healthy Peter Criss. There's a couple songs I'm listening to. I'm going, wow, it could have been a Kiss tune. And he sounds like old Peter Criss singing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, man,
sounds
I'm telling
like
you.
Freaking trying to mainline.
Sure,
Peter Criss.
Man. Yeah, rough and
good
cool.
Away.
Yeah, it's got a little attitude, but it's not like,
okay,
you know, over the top. Like, wee, I'm saying, hey, guys, check it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that guy. So there, point in your favor. Already, you know, I'm like, okay, first two tracks. I'm like, all right. Don't fuck this up. And he didn't, right? So then, okay, let me get back now. The other guy I was talking about, another dude in the band was in a band and still is that used to kick ass and then started sucking. Well, that was, That was, Chad Smith.
Okay.
Now, here's the deal with Chad Smith, okay?
He's not the drummer everybody thinks he is.
Dude, on this record?
No.
On this record, I think he's laying it down big and fat. My biggest joy on this record was Chad Smith. Hmm. I thought that, dude, at first when Chili Peppers were doing their, like, their college frat rock, it was psychotic and it was badass and he was hanging in there. It was cool and shit.
No.
And then they got into their, I'm going to sing a song from California. I'm going to record the record in California. California. And boom, doom, da, doom, ga.
I'm afraid I'm not a fan of that band. I apologize to anybody who is.
I'm not either.
I can't. I can't deal with that.
And every fucking song the Peppers put out in the last 15 years have been boom, doom, da, doom, da, doom. That fucking lazy pedestrian beat. He fucking throws down some serious hardcore rock funk on this record. I kid you. I'm a drummer. You know that.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
I've never seen the fascination you drummers have with Chad Smith. There's nothing there for me at all.
That's the point. I'm not fascinated with him.
I thought you were. You guys always champion this guy. I'm like, no, I don't hear anything from
him. Back in the day, I thought he was pretty cool. This record solidified it for me, man. I'm telling you.
What, their version of Higher Ground? It's awful.
Oh, for God's sake. That's not even on here.
No, the Red Hot Chili Peppers doing Higher Ground.
Oh, no, that's not even groovy or funky. There's some really fucking great tracks on here. Now, let me get back to my thing here. Okay, so another dude in this band I never really gave a shit about, blah, 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 Joe Satriani on guitar. Now, here's the deal. Why that? Well, I thought they dumbed down Smith's playing in the Peppers. I always thought, I'm not into the guitar god thing. I'm totally not in. The minute you are a guitar guy and do a bunch of instrumentals and call the band your own name, you've lost me. So I'm not a fan. Now I get he's good at it.
So you're not going to join the Ryan McKay band?
No. No. I don't know. What's it pay?
Yeah, nothing.
Oh, yeah.
It's what this podcast pays.
Somehow I'll end up in it, though. I don't know. Like, how did I? But no, so I think Satriani on this record, he doesn't do all the all the bullshit, the tricky gymnastics. He plays solid rock and roll guitar, like big, cool, clean riffs. Isn't busy fingering up everybody's parts,
Wow, fingering up.
Fingering up your parts.
I believe that's another one of your films.
That's my best film ever.
Great film.
Yeah.
Holiday classic.
Yes, I had a Gene Shalit afro and a mustache in that one.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so there's that. Okay, now let's get to Michael Anthony, right?
Yeah, his banged your.
Well, yeah, his girl. Fucking drummer banged my. So Van Halen was off the list immediately. And Michael Anthony, listen, we all know Michael Anthony's the king of the eighth notes. Dun, 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 dun.
Right.
He just pedaled eighth notes all through his Van Halen career. But his voice and his style and his image and his attitude really propelled them. He was the fun guy to watch. He was the cool of the Van Halen dudes.
Yeah.
And on this record, again, to go with what Chad Smith is doing, Chad Smith and Michael Anthony have stepped out of their little pedestrian box and laid down some funky, syncopated fucking tracks on this record. I'm telling you, I'm testifying right here in front of the court of Ryan McKay. It's a good record. I'm not going to say it's a great record, but I was pleasantly surprised, and it's the first Sammy Hagar, Van Halen, Joe Satriani, and Chili Peppers vinyl, and they're all combined. Ever on vinyl.
Yeah, and that's a real shock to me.
And I
but
liked
you got
it.
That.
And I liked the record. I didn't want I thought to myself, I was pretty high when I went to the store. All right.
That tells
me. No, but I'm glad but these things happen, right? So you go, all right, look, I'm gonna just fucking $10 and I picked it up, I go, it's a nice looking package, and I'm like, all of my friends are going, dude, why don't you like, Jim? And I'm like, because, and I'd go through my list like I just went through. And I went, it's $10.
That's actually a pretty good price on a new vinyl.
It is. 2009 came out. Here's the cool thing about that. Now, if you notice, I brought a blow dryer.
Okay, yes. Okay.
I'm going to get this out.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to need to take the vinyl out of the jacket here. Now watch this, Ryan. I want you to so we got this album covered.
What is happening here? I don't okay.
Now watch this. Okay.
He's setting up the record on right by the turntable, the record sleeve, the record jacket. and he's got a blow dryer. And he's blow drying the chicken foot cover. And as he blow dries it, it's heat sensitive. And now you can see the members of the band.
Look at that.
That's pretty cool.
Right there, right?
That's pretty cool.
Dude, that's worth $10 right the fuck there.
Okay.
Come on.
How excited.
Look at this.
All right. That's pretty cool. Okay. Yeah. All right.
After doing the inside, they go the fuck away.
Okay.
But
wow.
How cool is that? Now look at the record. Now look at that.
All right. Well, no, that's all right.
It's a heat-sensitive album jacket, and at 84 degrees, it starts revealing itself. So
pretty much all the time.
All the time here in Arizona.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Except for here in the cold bowels of Shabby Road, you know. How about that?
That's really cool, actually.
Dude, it's a pretty good record, man. It really is. It's a real cohesive band, and I think this is a great example of where the collective is greater than the sum of its parts. And trust me, I don't like any of the sum of its parts or their projects.
Right.
The production's great on it. Of course, it's Andy Johns.
Oh, really?
And Chickenfoot. Yeah.
The late Andy Johns. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I think what he really captured, you know, his simplicity. I think Andy Johns is rawness. He was not a fan of a lot of overdubs. He liked to do that.
I do remember that about this record, where it does feel live.
And again, point in their favor. They didn't. They played what they played, and I read up on them, and that's what they were saying. We didn't do overdubs. I like this album, Ryan.
What are you playing off?
I'm going to play off of side A. Mm-hmm. Oh, which I think I have over here now that I've emptied that out.
Yeah, you didn't want to put the blow dryer to the final.
That's $10. Oops, that's another $10. So I'm going to play Soap on a Rope.
Okay.
Which was kind of one of their first singles they released. Actually, didn't release it as a single, but it's kind of one that got popular. They released two other singles off this record. This is written by Sammy Hagar and Joe Satriani, as all the songs are on this record. But listen to the groove. Listen to the syncopation, man. I think this record's pretty effing good. And you know what? A.D. Christgau, I would give this a B-.
Get
that sound loud. My baby's about to get down. I'm down on one knee. Loud out first. My baby's about to get down. Whoa. Whoa. Don't forget to bring your rock and shoot a toothbrush.
Right, you guys?
That's pretty cool.
Fucking yeah.
I'm still reeling from what you showed me was inside of that record.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. All right. Wow. So, flashback. We probably told this story on one of the Lifers episodes or somewhere along the way. But just to recap, Ryan and I met. We were both subbing for the same gig. We didn't know each other. He got a call to sub for the guitar player. I got a call to sub for the drummer, and that's how we met. And I think I was telling my James Taylor story or something to that effect.
Somewhere around in there.
Yeah, during a break. And so fast forward, wait, a few months later.
3-4 months
yeah,
later.
I'm standing in line at Bank One Ballpark, the, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks stadium, as it was called then, for the very first concert ever. It was New Year's Eve.
And last, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. New Year's Eve, 1999, going into 1999.
Yeah, and, 98 into 99.
Yep, it was called New Year's Eve, and it was like Ozzy, Black Sabbath, Pantera, Slayer, and Megadeth or something.
Yes,
and,
that was all, yeah, all those.
And I'm standing in line, and literally right next to me, literally standing in line was, unbeknownst to me, Ryan McKay. And we kept looking at each other like,
do I know you?
Yeah, and he tried to catch, not get caught looking at the other dude trying to figure it out. We played that little fucking game.
I was staring at you going, why do I
know you're fucking
why do I know
fast?
That guy?
Yeah, yeah. And one of us spoke up. I can't remember who.
No, it was at another gig, same deal. We both subbed. And I was like, or you were, to me, saying, were you at New Year's Evil?
It's like, dude, you're that
guy. That's
yeah,
where
yeah,
I saw
yeah,
you from. I was like, yeah, we laughed about that.
So anyway.
And a friendship was fun.
Yeah, man. I mean, that was the beginning of our little marriage there. So
our marriage.
Right? So I'm opening this Chickenfoot album, and out falls the little card where you get the free download, which the guy thankfully stuffed back in there for me, so I get the free download now, too.
As long as he hasn't used it.
Oh, shit.
The code.
Oh, well, and so, and what else falls out is a ticket stub to New Year's Evil, Ryan.
That's unbelievable.
I looked at that. I did a double take. And, you know, we have a double pane of glass that goes in between where the control room is and the front room what we use as an ISO booth or, you know, the torture chamber. yeah, go to the room. And so I that immediately went up on the glass. And not much shit goes up on that glass. It's got to be pretty fucking sacred. So
yeah, that's awesome.
So already, before I even dropped the needle on that fucker, it had sentimental value. So I just went, I chose, I'm glad I bought this record.
That's an amazing artifact.
That's
really cool.
What about that, right? Beginning of our working relationship, essentially.
It was, yeah.
And here it is on the wall now, a reminder of, because I know I don't have that ticket stub.
It's so cool to find stuff inside of records. And that was just, that's astonishing.
Right?
Because it does mean something to you.
Yeah.
And you bought it knowing you were going to play on the show.
Yeah.
We do together, and that's where we basically met.
Yeah. So
I mean, we met at the gig before, but it was like so
And me buying that record, it's so unlikely.
That is very serendipitous.
Yeah, quite incredible. I was pretty jacked about that.
All right,
that.
Well, there's something really special about that record,
too. No.
Yes, there was.
Oh, no.
I believe the needle was dancing a little bit.
I sure miss Ricky sometimes. Damn you. The ever-vigilant Liz.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I am the living
mistress. Yeah, it didn't skip. I played the damn thing four times, the whole thing.
It's a loud record.
It is a real loud
Blame
record.
Blame it on Ryan. He cleaned the needle.
Yeah.
I did. Leave it to me to clean the needle.
That dirt clod was keeping it in the grooves. It was the weight from that big chunk of dirt.
Extra weight.
Keeping it down in the groove, yeah.
It was a fairly substantial amount of dust on there.
I bet there was. Dust and Chevy Road, are you high? So what am I drinking, Liz? Have you imagined
shot?
You pour me a
tequila.
Shot? Did you pour one?
Yes, I did.
Are you guys
going
to be able to keep it together?
Oh, you did. Is it over here?
Yep.
Oh, you fucking kidding. You are stealth like ninja.
Yes.
Oh, damn
right.
You.
Do your business.
All right, you guys. Here we go. Fuck your chicken.
My heavy metal box is going to be kicking off in style right here tonight. AD, I know you're not a huge fan of this band. But this is definitely a song that the DJ, I wish I could remember his name. If there's any Quincy folks that listen to this show that can remind me of what that metal, heavy metal show was around 1984 from the college radio.
I bet it was pretty badass.
Oh, it was great. So great.
College radio, they could program their own shit, couldn't they,
for the
most part?
Well, it was the only place where you would hear stuff. Like, I remember hearing Balls to the Wall by Accept and hearing Dio's Last in Line record, and these were the records that I freaking loved,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And one of the songs that would be spun there, and I kind of remember recording, because I record the songs onto a cassette.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd have them, you know? And of course, when I heard Take Hold of the Flame by Queensryche,
that right?
That's definitely going on a blank cassette. So I brought The Warning.
That's not a bad record.
Really? You like this?
That's not their worst.
No, it's not. This is good. Rage for Order's good. Mindcrime is kind of a legendary heavy metal record, but it's not one I really pull out. I actually like these better.
I do too.
This is a classic record from 1984 on EMI, and we're definitely going to hear Take Hold of the Flame here. Liz, you like Queensryche, right?
Yeah, is that the first time we've heard it down here?
Yes, this is the Queensryche inaugural trip down to Shabby Road here.
And Jeff Tate is a weird-looking dude, man.
He is a weird-looking dude.
Creepy.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a lot of weird-looking dudes in that van, actually. Look at on the back, look at Scott Rockenfield.
Oh, dude, his eyes are like...
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
Holy shit, yeah.
Igor. So the band... Let's
Scott Methenfield.
Methenfield.
Nah, I'm making...
So the band forms in Seattle in the late 1970s and early 80s as a heavy metal cover band called The Mob, doing Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and probably New Wobbum songs.
Yeah.
New wave of British heavy metal.
Phonetically speaking, of course.
They found that... odd-looking singer Jeff Tate, who sits in on a couple of shows, but bails, announcing that he does not want to do covers. And the Mob band, which is basically this Queensryche band here, your Scott Rockenfields, your Chris DeGarmo, your Michael Wilton?
Michael Wilton, yeah.
And some other guy, Jackson.
Eddie Jackson.
Thank you. So they start writing songs. Obviously, that was a direction they wanted to go in, but they just hadn't done it yet. So the Mob guys begin writing songs, and although Tate is in another original band at the time, he agrees to sing on their demo tape. And the demo tape that he sang on is what we know as Queensryche's first EP.
They ended up releasing that? No kidding.
Yeah.
A lot of bands did that back then in the heavy metal thing.
Yeah.
It was always testing
the
market.
It would get remixed and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a strong EP. Lady Wore Black is on it. Knight Rider.
Essentially, Metallica did that.
Yeah. Did they? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was some of that.
Released their first demo. It was their first, ended up being their first album.
Right. And, well, Queen of the Reich is one of their songs, and that's where they get their name. Mm-hmm. They were called The Mob, but then apparently that was taken, and then they basically just took Queensryche and put it together.
You mean Queen of the Reich?
Get up there. Come on. So anyway, their managers ended up sending the tape out to Kerrang! Magazine. And it received some glowing reviews, and it begins to snowball. And they reached back out to Jeff Tate, who had since gone back to his other band, and said, listen, our demo is blowing up over in the UK.
Yeah.
And he's going to play the hot hand. He's like, screw my other band. I'm going with these guys.
That guy has spent more time leaving Queensryche than I don't know.
Yeah. You know? Twice. Right. In this paragraph that I wrote.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're just getting started.
Right. So they released the EP independently on the on a small little indie label, and it did quite well because you can ship them over to Europe. You got to write up in Kerrang. Of course, every other heavy metal magazine is going to follow. Mm-hmm. And this is 1983.
There wasn't a lot of those sources then. So Kerrang was sort of the Bible.
Right.
Of
that was a big deal to get on, get into that. So they're opening for the band Zebra in Seattle, and their managers say, hey, A&R guys at EMI, why don't you come out and see Queensryche play? Here's all their buzz. And so they, so the guy comes out, loves them, signs them. And this is the result. This is their first full-length album. They did actually, obviously, EMI is going to take that EP, remix it, and put it out on their own, you know, in a wider audience and stuff. So they're in their studio doing the this album, The Warning, which I think, again, is like one of their strongest albums. I just love this era of Queensryche. To me, that's because I was a kid and I grew up listening to this heavy metal from this period. And these guys were right in the thick of it. And I was like, this is what Queensryche sounds like, you know?
Well, they, I think at that point in time, they were raw. They were eager. And they first of all, they didn't fall into the 80s trap like a lot of them, and become typical right away.
They were pretty adventurous from the get-go. Even listening to this song for its time, it is pretty much ahead of its time.
Right, I say so. And then when they got into the more conceptual stuff, it's like, and I give them credit for that rather than falling into the schmaltz 80 stuff.
Yes,
so
I agree.
I can't dislike them for that. There's just something about Tate's voice that after a while – and I like the band. I like what they do. I like their style. Tate wears on me after a while. To me, it's just like it's you
any
know,
high singer is going to do that too.
Yeah, it's the note. He hits that the note.
But it's interesting how they definitely took what Judas Priest was doing in the 70s and what Iron Maiden had just started doing. This is 83, 84.
I would agree
so
with that.
So Iron Maiden has only got Bruce Dickinson in the band for like a year.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of influence in that. In this record of that music, but they do stuff that was unique to the time. Like there's that computery one at the end of side one, and even songs like The Warning and stuff do have a production element that are very interesting.
Yeah, I think your comparison to the British bands of the time.
Oh yeah,
as opposed to what Metallica, let's say, were doing, you know, at the time.
Yeah, and you hear Jeff take on a faux British accent too. In Take Hold of the Flame, you'll hear it. Save a dream. What do I forget what word it is. You'll hear it when it plays.
Yeah.
You'll get like, oh, what are
Chime
you?
Chime or something.
So, yeah, what are you, Madonna?
Yeah, right.
So,
what are you, Manana?
So they're recording this album. It's their first major label. Of course, they go $300,000 over budget.
Kick ass. Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well done. Deli trays, limos, and coke.
That's probably a lot of it. And
didn't you read the rider?
They're on tour in Japan, and they get a message that EMI has just confiscated the tapes, and they hired a guy to mix it, and they're putting it out right now while you're gone.
Oh, sons of bitches.
They were pissed, and they hate this record because of it.
Really?
They hate the mix. They didn't approve this track listing. They have a different track listing and everything else.
I'm guessing they would have chose a different photo on the back as well. But that's just me. Yeah, Scott Rockenfeld is really creeping me out right now, right. Staring
but,
me down.
You know, they can hate it all they want, but it does fairly well. It does manage to go gold later, but it was a great debut. I remember hearing – I mean, if I'm growing up in a small town. If I've heard that song and I've seen that video, then they're getting a lot of coverage.
Oh, yeah.
And they got some money behind them and stuff. And of course, the main thing that really pushed Queensryche into the – scene at that point is that they got two huge tours on this record. They opened up for Kiss on the Animalize tour, and they jumped on to the Iron Maiden World Slavery tour, the Power Slave tour Iron Maiden.
Right. Oh my God.
So that's just a huge coup for them.
Oh fuck yeah, man.
Well, let's drop the needle on this. Side 2, track 1, AD, in honor of that college radio heavy metal show. This was definitely one that they played a lot, and I adore this song. It's so powerful. And dated, but whatever. It's Take Hold of the Flame, and it's Queensryche from The Warning, 1984, September.
We see the light of those who find the world has passed them by. Too late to save a dream that's growing cold. We realize that fate must hide its face from those who try to see the distant signs of unfortold. Oh, oh, oh,
my gosh. I am 12 years old again. I don't know about you.
I was just telling, while it was on, telling you guys that I think the first time I heard this was outside the Silver Fox. Monarch was playing. And I believe it was Joe Rowe. Yeah. And believe it was Joe Rowe. We're on a break. He goes, dude, come out here. I got this new tape. And we got to his car. And he put, we're puffing doobs and doing some blow and shit. And he puts this on. And it's like, fuck, whoa. But then he hits that first note when he goes, that first note, I go, Rob Halford wannabe. And I love the song, but immediately on hearing that, I kind of went, eh.
Because it wasn't as good as Priest.
And you know what? That might be about, like you said, they didn't like the mix, and that has a lot to do with it.
I think they have a bit of a point.
When that solo came in, you could literally hear the fader getting rolled up, and it was not a clean mix. And right when the guitar solo kicked in, it was like, and it got really loud, It's like,
Yeah, it was rushed.
But you know what? Stands up, though. It's fucking great.
It's the song.
Loved hearing that. I hadn't heard that in forever.
Every single part of that song is great.
Yeah.
It's a hook for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And the proof of that is that there is no second chorus. It goes right into a guitar solo,
and you don't miss it. Wow. I didn't even notice that.
And you're excited about the guitar solo. You're like, yeah. You're like, don't you want the chorus?
I didn't even notice it. Wow. Check it out. Look at that. Yeah.
The pre-chorus and the verse, everything is great.
Yeah, this song's so good we don't need to go back to the chorus. That's fucking badass. Yeah. I never noticed that.
All right, what you got there?
Well, listen, okay, here's what. I brought an unlikely little 1-2 punch for my first selection, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring fucking kick-ass Queensryche, right? So now we're putting our dicks on the bar here, okay?
No, we're not.
So now, I thought that I was good. Now, remember, I have the ones of my three selections is a pop group. From the 60s, but I ain't going there.
Can't go there yet.
I also told you I'm going psychedelic. So I'm going to top your Queensryche. I got Queensryche, and I'm going to raise you as I shake my box at you.
All right.
Shake my box at you. All right, here's the deal.
It's a Beyonce song.
It is indeed. All the single ladies.
Shake my box at you. Come on and shake my box at you.
This one, she does shake her box at you in that video. Everybody's shaking their boxes
at
you.
Yeah, she does, I know.
God, Jesus Christ, don't shake your box at me. Something might fall out of your box.
It might.
Excuse me, Beyonce, I believe something's fallen out of your box.
There's my car keys.
And my wristwatch. All right.
My Fitbit.
I don't even know what that is.
Okay. All right. Go.
So, as you've noticed, it's obvious, not only on the show, but when we're talking, on a day-to-day basis, talking to each other and hanging out and shit. I have been obsessed with the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm.
If it's garage, pre-punk, proto-punk, pre-prog, psychedelic, if it's heavy, and if it's got just
dark,
raging, it's got raging guitars and raging keyboards and phonetic drums, I'm so fucking in. I'm hooked on that shit. Now, when it came out, when that style was happening, remember, I'm a kid, so this started really happening in 66, sort of underground, but really started emerging 67, 68, when bands like MC5, 68, 69, Blue Cheer, and all those great, great bands from that era, like Strawberry Alarm Clock, Chocolate Watch Band, stuff like that. But I hadn't even heard of some of these. And I was just coming into my own. I was 8. Hell, 66, I was 7 years old. And I was still digging the Monkees, just getting into the Beatles and buying records like that. But my ear was tweaked. I'd hear these songs every once in a while on that college radio. Speaking of college radio, WHFS and little college radio stations around D.C., WGTB and things like that. Or WHMC, where Barry Richards was, that AM station, that great DJ, Barry Richards.
Okay.
And so they would play this stuff, and I go, wow, that's heavy, that's evil. And, of course, I am the god of hellfire, and I'm like, holy shit, Alice Cooper comes out. It's crazy, it's evil. I see Screaming Jay Hawkins on, the Milton Berle show or Ed Sullivan or something. And I'm like, I put a spell on you, and I'm just going, yeah, the fucking evil, dark, voodoo-y, heavy shit. I get so excited. But this, I had such a fascination with it, and I was so into horror movies. So all this stuff just fit my little preteen agenda, 9-10 years old, when I'm now okay, oh dude, you can play the Beatles record backwards, I was getting into that kind of thing. And I missed a lot of that because all of a sudden I got swept in up into Sabbath, which, of course, again, dark and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Zeppelin, mysterious in their own way. But mm-hmm. Alice Cooper had come in, you know. Yeah. And so by then that whole psychedelic thing was had been bought and sold to the next heirs, if you will. The dudes from the 70s. I kind of still put this stuff into the 60s category.
Yeah.
Even though it spilled into the 70s. You know what I mean? Sort of the second wave of,
yeah.
which would be Alice Cooper, and who took that macabre idea and made it heavy and dark. And
put Kiss into that category.
Put Kiss in there. The horror movie rock.
Of the 70s yeah, version.
That's what I'll call it. So horror movie rock.
The 60s guys did it in obscurity. Yeah, more or less.
Right.
Except for Sabbath.
Right. And Sabbath, what, was 69 their first record?
I think it was 69.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that really brought it in. But that was the new wave of that, you know. But the predecessors like the Chocolate Watch Band and the Crazy World of Arthur Brown, mm-hmm. you know, Arthur Lee's Love and those guys.
Okay.
You know, they fell by the wayside, you know, by the wayside and stuff. And so going back after starting doing the show – and discovering some of the records from the Mott collection that I'm still going through and just delighting in. I'm finding so much cool shit. Now, I did not get this from the Mott collection, but this came from an idea of a record that I played from the Mott collection, which led me to Arthur Brown, which led me to the Atomic Rooster.
Okay, I've heard of them, and I don't know much about them.
Okay,
but they often come up in those circles that you're describing.
Right. Now, and on a very recent episode, matter of fact, episode 115, two episodes ago, called The Wildest Oiks, I believe, mm-hmm. I played a track from The Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
You did?
And they're the ones who, fire, you know, I'm the god of hellfire, right?
Right.
And that came out in 68, so... That band, if you listen, go back to that episode, and I kind of told the story of the band, they were all a little fucking wacky, you know, I mean, like Insane Asylum wacky. Well, go back and listen to that episode, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the keyboard player from this band, Vincent Crane, was the mastermind behind the music of Arthur Brown. He was Arthur Brown's keyboard player. So when you hear fire, bam, bam, bam. You know, that's
Vincent
Crane. So
that's the guy in the
right.
band.
Right. Okay. So Vincent Crane had troubles of his own. You know, the Arthur Brown thing was having issues. One of the guys couldn't fly. So that they scrapped a bunch of tour dates because he couldn't fly.
Oh, you'd never get to America.
Right. You know, and that's what they needed to do. So to get to America, Arthur Brown, they had that hit, you know, fire, and they couldn't capitalize on it. So their records kind of fell by the wayside, and that was that. Didn't sell. So this Vincent Crane, they finally did get to the U.S., but it was a little too late. And Vincent Crane then has a nervous breakdown on the tour.
Because he failed his band?
No, he was bipolar. He had bipolar issues.
Oh. Okay.
So they flew him back, put him in a mental uh-oh.
It's all right.
How many drinks? You have to drink a bottle of something, Ryan. I think that's the first ever drinks with a complete drink spill here.
It's empty.
It's completely empty.
It was an empty cup.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Oh.
Go on.
Oh, you're Irish. I should know better than that. Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah. I don't have cups full of liquor around here.
No.
I have cups full of...
If they're full of liquor, they're in my hand.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, so he flies back, goes to this insane asylum for months. Meanwhile, the band just disbands. They're done. Oh, Arthur Brown, the reason they disbanded is because Arthur Brown ended up missing. And all he wrote to the people, you know, the business, the record labels, I've joined a commune. So he's gone. He didn't say where, what the fuck. Arthur Brown is gone. He's just gone.
All right.
So this guy's in a wacky ward. He gets out and goes, well, that's just fucking splendid. Right? So he hooks up with Carl Palmer. Palmer.
It's just like that actor Carl Malden. Carl Palmer. It's getting better.
It is. So he runs into Carl Palmer. They say, you know what? Let's do a thing. Let's base it on the same idea as Crazy World of Arthur Brown. So they get it together. It's him, Carl on drums, and then they get this bass player. Again, Arthur Brown didn't have a guitar player. It was all keys, bass, and drums. There was no no guitar in that. So they wanted to work that formula. So they made the first album with Palmer on it, and it didn't sell for shit. And but they had their eyes on America because they had tasted America and knew that they needed to go back there if they wanted to be relevant. So what they did is for the American release,
not relevant, but
at least have a shot at it.
Lot of money over here. That's, that was the big deal.
And no American audience this record came out in 1970, September 70. No American audience is going to take a heavy band in 1970 with no guitar and take them seriously. So what they did was, for the British release, they released it three-piece, keyboards, bass, and drums, and vocals. And the bass player was the singer. So what they did, they got a studio guitar player to come in and overdub guitars
really?
For the American release of their first record.
Really?
Yeah, it was really weird. And it actually started people kind of raised an eyebrow, but not enough to notice. Mm-hmm. So they went back. Then they made this album. This is their second album, which is the definitive Atomic Rooster. This is Death Walks Behind You.
Oh, my.
And this is a monster album. Now, what they did on this one, they became a three-piece. What they did was they kept the guitar player, sacked the bass player, and then the keyboard player.
Kick bass?
With the Taurus pedals.
Yeah.
So he played bass with his feet and his left hand. So now they had the complete band. They had and this is a heavy fucking record.
A la Doors.
It's not schmaltzy. This is heavy. This is really heavy shit. You know, take the same lineup and you got the California, you know, or Texas radio, you know, that cheesy left hand that dude does. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? But this guy's fucking throwing down. I mean, you don't. I'm thinking about that
really
Texas radio, that song. It's like a polka.
The Doors
are a polka band. Have you heard of the Doors? They're a good polka band.
I'm with you on that. Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So, but this is some heavy shit. Interestingly enough, one of our little favorite bands down here at Shabby, Big Elf.
Ooh.
On their 2000 album, their very first album, was it called Moneymaker? Money Machine, I think, was their first album, right?
Yeah,
it was 2000, their first album. Been a while. Mm-hmm. They covered the title track.
Oh, really?
Death Walks Behind You. I don't have that record. I've got Hex and Cheat the Gallows.
Yeah, I start with Hex.
I would start with Cheat the Gallows. There's where you want to start.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I have Hex and Cheat the Gallows, which is I really want to get their first album because obviously it's fucking heavy. They're mm-hmm. doing this song. So anyway, they got this three-piece band. Shit's happening. They're starting to have hits in England. One of the songs went to number one. And I'm sorry. Number 11. Another one went
big difference.
Yeah, huge. Yeah. That would be 10.
Yes.
Let's see you keeping tally. Thank you.
Yay.
Me and my math.
You get a gold star.
Me and my math.
Gold star for AD.
And so it ended up being a really cool thing for them. They two hits off the record. I think one was 11 and one was in the 2022, something like that, and did okay. But again, Vincent Crane, the writer and the main guy, the keyboard player, who's a maniac on the fucking Ammon B3, dude.
And also a maniac in real life.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
Of but, schizophrenic.
And so, so all his demons are fucking the band up and just kind of getting in the way.
Oh, boy.
But they managed to put five albums out between 1970
prolific.
And 75. Touring, not so much. That might have fucked them up a little bit because they had these singles, then they could have probably capitalized on them. So members were always in and out of the band because of the turmoil. He was a wreck, on and off stage. I tell you what, if you like Captain Beyond.
I do.
If you like Iron Butterfly, if you like the early blood rock stuff, this is the shit. Sadly, though, February 4th, 1989, at age 45, Crane intentionally ingested an overdose of Anadin, which is painkillers. So he finally offed himself. But this, if you like these heavy bands, you're going to love this.
Thank you.
What? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Atomic Rooster, Ryan.
I like that.
Uh-huh. That's the Death Walks Behind You album. That's their second album. I don't think I announced the name of the song beforehand, which is unusual. That was Sleeping for Years. This came out on Elektra Records in the U.S. and BNC Records in the U.K., September 70. That song is written by John Ducan. That's D-U, like DuPont, D small u, right? Ducan, C-A-N-N. But later he dropped a Du, so it's just John Can. And it was produced by the Atomic Rooster themselves by arrangement, quote, with the Robert Stigwood Organization, ATG. So somebody owes Bobby a blowjob.
Okay, easy now. Oh, wow.
Anyway, that's Atomic Rooster. I love that fucking band. Dude, you turn yourself on. This is a Start Here album
that's
for Atomic Rooster. Absolutely.
That's a cool record.
What you got, brother?
Oh, wow. We've mentioned this band about three or four times on this show already, and I brought Judas Priest. Back to my heavy metal box here.
So I put my dick on the bar, and then you go, Judas Priest. It's like, what are you going to do?
Stained Class.
You did bring that. Oh, lordy.
Stained Class from 1978, February.
Digging deep.
Columbia Records, and we're going to hear Beyond the Realms of Death. Wow. We're going dark.
We're dark shabby.
And freaking great.
Bad shabby.
And this is the fourth album in the catalog of Judas Priest, of course. And it's the first one to dent the top 200 in the U.S. So Judas Priest, I don't think they – did they tour on Sin After Sin? I want to say they may have in 77.
I wouldn't know.
Just a brief little stint or something. But our listeners can chime in on that. This is the first album that features Les Binks. And more.
I've always thought there should be more Binks.
Yeah, more
Binks.
Yeah. Yes. He's the drummer. He's the new addition to the band here. And he would go on to play on the following album, which is Hellbent for Leather.
So the fourth album, I think he was their ninth drummer.
Yeah, they
mistaken.
Were like switching drummers out.
It's a very Spinal Tap.
But I bring it up because Les Binks plays on Unleashed in the East, which is a seminal live album. So great, man. It's his drumming was a lot more intricate than Johnny Pedophile, who they would get next.
It's actually his real name now. He changed it.
It's a terrible stage name. Even the Plasmatics wouldn't allow that.
Well, you know, you've got to leave your mark somehow.
So, yeah. So I'm digging Les Binks playing on this record. And but here's the thing about Stained Class. Where are you at? Well, let me ask you, where are you at with Stained Class? Do you know this record? Are you a fan of it?
Well, I like everything up. I was a Priest fan. I like their stuff. I think Sad Wings of Destiny, and I drop off after that.
Oh, wait. Really?
Yeah.
Not Sin After Sin?
Oh, that was after that.
Yes, it was.
Oh, yes, then, yes.
You've got your order.
Yes,
all.
Yeah, I did. I would say yes after that.
You've got your order Tetherway Round.
Yeah. And then it became those dreaded...
So
formulaic.
You don't know this record very well, I bet.
I have it. It's not one of my more familiar. I like Sad Wings and Sin After Sin. Those are the ones I go to. And Rock and Roll is good as well, too.
Perfect way to leave off, because honestly, I don't think this is Judas Priest's strongest set of songs. Now, a lot of people love this record and cite it as very influential, and no doubt it is. But I think it's their best guitar album. And I think a lot of that, the praise that gets heaped upon this record is the riffs are unbelievable on this record.
Yeah.
This is about as good of a guitar album that Judas Priest ever did. I think Rob Halford kind of slips a little bit for the most part on this record. Obviously, there's huge highlights, including the song I'm going to play and songs like Exciter and I actually like Savage is pretty cool too. It's kind of a deep
cut. Some of that stuff wanders. I mean, it's almost like the early Scorpion stuff too can wander. And then they put an album together where they lock in and it's a song album. You know, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's kind of where I put this one in that category. So it's one that
when you listen to it back now and you really kind of appreciate the guitar work, I think for me. Glenn Tipton and KK Downing. I mean, Glenn is killing it here. His solos are always interesting, and I've been finding this more and more as I listen back to the old Priest catalog. His solos are always so jagged And there's like these odd leaps and melody and things that nobody really does. Nobody sounds like him.
Well, almost like you can't do that. And he goes, well, bloody well can. You know?
Yeah.
Like most people wouldn't do it because it's not like what you do. Maybe. That was his thinking. Who knows? I don't know.
And I picked the song Beyond the Realms of Death because it's a highlight of the record, of course. But it also contains what I think might be Glenn Tipton's finest hour.
Oh.
And then it also features an outro solo by K.K. Downing. That is K.K. Downing's finest hour.
There you go.
So
really?
It's the two twin guys freaking nailing it.
Okay. That's like
unbelievable.
Officially, okay.
And, you know, lyrically, this song is also quite interesting because it tells the story of a guy who just couldn't take the world and becomes sort of catatonic in the sense of...
A.D. Adams?
No. I was thinking more ELO's El Dorado.
Oh, like Jesus. Like, yeah. Walter Mitty type thing. Yeah.
He's in some kind of a hospital. He's completely catatonic.
Living in his own little head, yeah.
And the verses are exposition, saying the story of what's happening. And the chorus is the subject's inner dialogue with himself. And he's saying, I've left the world behind. I'm safe here in my mind. I'm free to speak with my own kind. This is my life, and I'll decide, not you. So he seems like he's having trouble in society. Like he can't handle that.
Maybe Rob's coming out at that time.
Hey.
Someone saved my life tonight.
He needs a John Baldwin.
Yeah, right.
The second verse, he dies though.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of poetic how he puts the death of this catatonic figure in a hospital. Until one day he smiled, it seemed as though with pride, and the wind kissed him goodbye. Like I like his last image is like he goes. Motherfuckers, I'm dying. I'm
see you, suckers. Seeing the funny
so
papers.
Suckers.
Yeah. Seeing the funny papers.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, beyond the realms
Singing
of death
crazy.
He goes.
Yeah.
So great, great song. And that's what we're going to hear here in a couple minutes. But you can't talk about Stained Class without talking about the lawsuit that took place in 1990.
Well, yes.
December 23rd, 1985, 20-year-old James and 18-year-old Ray, after hours of drinking beer and smoking marijuana, allegedly listened to some Judas Priest records.
Well, let's put on some Priest, kill ourselves, Ryan. Come on.
And went to this is a weird, weird story.
Yes.
Sounded like Johnny Carson right there.
Wow.
Weird, wacky, little weird.
They went to a playground at a church with a 12-gauge shotgun to end their lives.
Who doesn't, right?
Ray was the first, the 18-year-old, was the first to place the shotgun under his chin. He died instantly after pulling the trigger. James, 20, then shot himself but survived, suffering severe facial injuries, and following numerous complications, James too died in 1988, three years after their apparent suicide pact. The parents and lawyers determined that the guys were listening to Better By You, Better Than Me, the song off this record.
Do it.
Right. And they hatched this plan, and they found that if you play the record backwards, you can clearly hear the phrase.
Do it. They're talking about, dude, pull your dick out and have a wank. Come on. Okay.
Take it easy.
Do it.
And the judge inevitably ruled that the so-called do it message was a result of an accidental mix-up of background lyrics and dismissed the case. Sad story. Now, this is a fascinating exercise in sociology to me because it's like two dudes hanging out, drinking beer. Smoking weed, listen to records.
Yeah.
What is the dynamic that creates this situation where it's suddenly like, let's get the 12-gauge shotgun, let's go and off ourselves? Is there a bullying thing? Is this like a alpha male to another kid? What is happening? What is the dynamic there?
Let me answer that in the best way I can. Let's say the first guy. Okay, I'll go first.
20 and 18.
Right. Okay,
so 20 and 18 years old. Okay?
So the first guy goes, and if that was – he goes and he believes and trusts that the other guy is going to follow suit. He just – and he's determined to kill himself. So that's, I think, a mental issue. I think the real issue comes with the second guy looking at the other dude's brain splattered everywhere, and he goes,
"Absolutely,
oh yeah, I'll go do that too." Instead of going, "Oh fuck, no way," yeah.
And that's the older one.
Yeah, well, it's the older one usually can talk the younger one into whatever.
That's what I thought too. Right. But the younger one killed himself first. So it does sound like he talked him into it.
But then the older one goes, I'll go ahead and do that too. That's the fucking mind number. That's the one that just, you go,
well, what
wow.
are you going to do at that point? You've got a kid with a shotgun who's dead and you're there
with
the shotgun.
We were hunting and he blew his brains out.
There's no getting out of it. I think that was his thing. And he's the one that lived for 3 years afterwards.
I wonder how they know that they were listening to that song in particular.
I think it was on the turntable.
Well, maybe the song they shot themselves during the prior song, and they just got there when that song was playing. Do you follow me?
I don't know. Maybe they had, the,
they
had a Walkman.
They
had a Walkman. Yeah. They could have been listening to Prince.
I mean,
did they leave notes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know those details, but very fascinating sociological.
Didn't that start all the whole damn slew of parents suing?
Yeah,
well,
the whole ridiculousness is that they try to bring that in.
I think the saddest part is the parents, and you know, you got these parents that lose their teenage kids and their, you know, their 20-year-old son or whatever, and the lawyers come in and go, listen, Judas Priest has a shit ton of money, and we can sue him, and all it did was disgrace the memories of these kids, and now you only think of them as the kids that tried to sue Judas Priest,
right?
And it's sad.
And
it's sad.
They loved the Priest, you know.
They were Priest fans, man.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, listen, anybody who's driven to that point, it's sad to begin with. You know, that is such a bizarre situation. You know, as such, anyway. But to bring Judas Priest into it, into a court of law.
Alice Cooper
was depicting hangings and guillotining and you know.
What were you saying, Liz?
What about the Budweisers they were drinking? Why wasn't that?
Yeah, why not? Maybe Anheuser-Busch ought to stand trial for.
Yeah.
I would think that would be it.
No, maybe they did, and they just pointed at Judas Priest. They did it. And just like, all right, which one of you? They did. And Anheuser-Busch just points at Judas Priest.
We now have the three frogs from Budweiser standing trial.
Yes. Bud.
So, on a happier note, let's hear Beyond the Realms of Death.
Door. No matter
That's a dark number. From 1978. That is Stained Glass, Judas Priest, of course, Beyond the Realms of Death.
Well, you know, we were talking about
those guitar solos. Are you kidding?
They were great. But we were talking about, you know, with each, like, okay, I started off with Chicken Foot and, like, I put my dick on the bar. Okay, I'll heavy this.
I don't know what that reference means.
Well, it's the old who's got who's more badass, right? So you put your heavy shit, right? And then I'll go, okay, well, I got this. I got Atomic Rooster. Thump, you know?
And I've got
And
Jesus
then you
Priest.
Bring Priest. But it's so dark. It's now, it's like, it's time. Okay, you win. You win.
Yay.
You know? Man. Thud. Right? And so I'm going to lighten things up here a little bit.
By the way, Dick on the Bar was the third baseman for the Dodgers in the 70s.
Batting cleanup.
Dick on the Bar.
Dick on the Bar.
Andy Etchebaron. Dick on the Bar.
Yeah. Dick on the Bar.
But this, I'm going to lighten things up here. Although,
please do.
Although the album I've chosen it was made because of death.
Well, that's just...
Something about the Shabby Road Show. All roads end up leading to Sam Cooke, Ryan. I don't know how that is.
Oh, did you bring Sam Cooke?
No, I did not.
Oh, fucker.
Now, I did, however...
Tease.
I did, however, bring an album by the Supremes called We Remember Sam Cooke.
Oh.
And it's the Supremes, pre-Diana Ross and the Supremes, doing all Sam Cooke
songs. So Diana Ross is not present?
No, she is there. Now, that's I could get into a long history of the Supremes, and I'm not going to. But, like, I actually went down this rabbit hole, Ryan. I made charts. Look at this. I made Supreme charts and everything with their timelines and stuff. And, you know, like Deep Purple. I liken them to Deep Purple.
Oh, Mark.
Like Mark 1. Like,
Mark 3.
Right. Like like Supremes Mark I, for instance, 1959 through 60, there was a four-piece. It was Florence Ballard, who started the band. Florence Ballard started the band. She met – now, here's the deal. This band called the Primes, okay? They came in from Ohio and moved into Detroit in these projects, right? And the Primes was – what's his name? Paul Williams and Eddie Kendricks.
Paul Williams, the songwriter?
Yeah, the singer from The Temptations.
Okay.
Him and Eddie Kendricks. So they moved. So these young girls, junior high school girl, junior F and high, Florence Ballard goes to see them, runs into them. They were the new band in town. Well, I live over in the projects. Well, we live over in the projects. So this junior high chick goes to see the band, meets the manager, introduces Florence Ballard to his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Says, if you can get two other girls to sing, I'll call you guys the Primettes and you can be their sister band.
Okay.
So she goes and gets Mary Wilson and Diana Ross. Boom, chicka boom. Now they're Primettes, right? So that lasts till 1960, 1 year, right? And that chick is Betty McGlowan. Well, she's done because she breaks up with the dude. So now it's Mark II, 1960 to 62, Florence Ballard, Mary Wilson, Diana Ross, and Barbara Martin, right? So she's still in. Florence Ballard.
So this is a Spinal Tapian replacement.
But Florence Ballard,
Florence is the stalwart.
She was the key. She was the key. She was the one who said, hey, I've got this thing. Do you guys want to do this, right?
Okay.
Meanwhile, Diana Ross is kind of sneaking on up. Now, Mary Wilson was her best friend, and Mary Wilson was the one who brought Diana Ross in, okay? So now you got your Supremes Mark III. This is the shit. This is when the shit hit the fan. You got your Diana Ross, you got your Florence Ballard, and you got your Mary Wilson, right? Well, they're doing hits like Where Did Our Love Go? Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love. I got you back in my arms again. Can't Hurry Love, Keep Me Hanging On, right?
Good Lord.
So, dude, right? So that's the fucking
hit
boom,
ever
boom,
hit.
Boom. Yeah. Now, that lasts till 67.
Who's banging Berry Gordy and all this?
Well, that's the key number, 1967. Around 1966, the writing was on the wall. Diana Ross is banging Berry Gordy, and there was already talk about, we're going to be naming the band Diana Ross and the Supremes. And Florence Ballard was like, wait a minute, I got you fucking guys this thing. I got you this fucking deal.
Oh,
and
shitty.
So she started drinking and fucking
Florence
up. Yeah. Fucking up on shows and stuff. And not showing up for recording dates. So they call a bunch of chicks and they're like doing stand-ins. They call this Cindy Bird song chick, mm-hmm. who was with Patti LaBelle's Bluebells at the time.
Okay.
And the only reason they chose her because she looked like Florence Ballard, and she was
nobody would know
kind of pro right, so they would sneak her in. So the whole time the stealth shit's going down, and Mary Wilson, who's Mary Wilson, remember she was there from the very beginning,
yes,
with Florence. She's going, listen, Florence, here's what's happening. They're telling me they don't understand how tight they are. So they're telling Mary Wilson everything, like, hey, here's what's going on. We're bringing in this chick, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. So –
well, listen, if Florence is not being able to perform, then –
well, but she felt the band was being stolen from her.
Well, it's no excuse for not performing.
No, you're right about that. You're right about that. At that point in time, she could have – but you know how contracts go and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They were holding money back from her too. She didn't have money to go. Where was she going to go? Yeah. Leave and with no money? They right. go, well, we got royalty check for you. And yeah, holding it in front of her face like a carrot. It was ruthless. I went down that rabbit hole and read about Florence Ballard. Dude, it's fucking heartbreaking. So anyway, yeah, and I'm going to play more Supremes. This, again, is the first time we've played Supremes on this show. All three of my records are the first time. But I'll get into that a whole nother episode. This was done with the real Supremes, the strongest one, I think, with Diana, with Florence, and with Mary. And Mary Wilson, by the way, is the only one who was there from the first day till the last day in 1977. So it's pretty cool.
Oh.
The story of the Supremes is a really, really, really great story. And I really dug digging into it mm-hmm. as far as the personnel and going on. But the Florence Ballard thing broke my heart. And she ended up dying. Okay. She ended up going broke. They gave her $130,000 and told her to get the fuck out. Well, she was in debt anyway because of the whole thing and ended up dying in squalor of a blood clot. She couldn't get, you know, any help.
Gosh. So that is a sad story.
Heartbreaking. But this record is a real cool record. And again, Berry Gordy capitalizing. Sam Cooke died December 1964. This record came out in April of 65.
Yeah.
You bitches better get in, make me a record real quick.
It's not even cold in the grave.
No, I mean, yeah, Sam's still trying on his old shoes, you know? Lady,
you shot me.
So, but this is a great, great album. They really do him well. They do songs like Cupid, You Send Me, Chain Gang, Bring It On Home to Me. But I'm going to play the last song on the album, last song on side two, Ain't That Good News. And it's written by Sam Cooke. This whole record was produced by Harvey Fakwa, Hal Davis, and Mark Gordon, Larry, came out of Motown Records. But the last track is pure gospel. It really shows the gospel roots.
I'd have to go back. I don't know if I know this song by Sam Cooke, and I love Sam Cooke.
This is a blistering tune about love and loss, and come on, man, join me at the table. Hey, I want to be your, you know, good news. He wants me back, you know, and all this. It's a beautiful tribute to their gospel roots, I think. And I think the Supremes are at their best.
Oh, my baby's coming home tomorrow. Ain't that good news? Yeah, ain't that news? Yeah, ain't that news? Have a party.
come on. No more sorrow, no more darkness here at the Shabby. It's on. Have you seen the light, Liz? Have you seen the light?
I have. Ryan, can you see the light from here?
I have. I love it.
What a great, great fucking album. That's the Supremes. We Remember Sam Cooke. It's a great, great tribute album. They do all Sam Cooke songs. Came out in 65 on Motown Records. That was the Supremes, my favorite Supremes, the Supremes Mark III with Diana Ross, Florence Ballard, the beautiful, horribly drunken Florence Ballard. I've got great stories about her that I didn't get to. I'm going to be playing more Supremes just to tell that story. And of course, the stalwart and gracious Mary Wilson, who was there for all of it.
Lead vocal was?
Lead vocal on that was Diana Ross.
All right, there
She was starting to, you know, bang Barry Gordy.
Yeah, there you go. All right, there we go.
What you got?
Oh, man, it is, you know, my heavy metal night. And,
okay. Bring us down.
No, right. No, this is a party.
Oh, good.
This is a party.
Say that Supremes were a good little turning point there.
Well, I'm going to fifth grade again. And spending the night at Louis Quintero's house.
All right.
And it's probably – I go back to that because I think it's the first time I've ever heard a guy – well, I mean, I think he was the one that said, yeah, let's put on some music. And he did that. He put that record out.
And you got scared.
And I was like, oh hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's
I don't know what's happening there, but I want to hear that. The record I just pulled out is –
what's in his mouth?
I don't – grape jelly.
It really is. It's
I brought Speak of the Devil – by Ozzy Osbourne.
Damn right you did.
Jet Records, November of 1982. And I freaking adore this record.
Who doesn't, right?
And I think this is the first time I heard Ozzy.
Come on.
Okay. Now, you've just unsheathed the gatefold picture. Now, what do you see in that picture?
Well, I see Ozzy sitting on a wooden throne.
Yes.
Holding or a sort of a metal, giant metal cross leaning on him. He does have fangs.
Yes.
And there is a, you know, some sort of a Jawa figure or a...
it is a dwarf.
Zombie dwarf in front of him, yes. Sort of looking a bit King Diamond-ish.
Yes. Would you like to know what Ozzy would call that dwarf?
Sharon?
No.
Oh.
Jack.
Ronnie.
Ronnie the dwarf.
Do you know why?
Because oh, no. Yes. Oh, really?
Yes.
No. That?
Because there was camps that were fighting at this time.
And that's that? That's Ronnie the fucking dwarf. Fuck you, Ronnie Dio.
Yes. Oh. Because Ronnie James Dio. Yeah.
I never knew that.
And that particular dwarf.
Was named Ronnie?
Well, his name wasn't Ronnie, but that's what Ozzy called him.
He actually formed a band called Dio and went on to great things. That actually is Ronnie Dio.
Well, he would give Ozzy drinks during the set, come out, and I think he gets like hung like Alice Cooper style at some point during the show or something like that too.
Wow.
But yeah, a little shitty. I read that today.
Sharon,
I was like,
that's
I
Sharon's
know.
Idea.
I think so too. Ozzy's just kind of out of it.
He doesn't give a fuck.
This is great Ozzy Osbourne. This is drunken, fun, what am I doing Ozzy Osbourne. This is months after Randy Rhoads passes away in the plane crash.
Yeah.
He's got Brad Gillis on guitar now, but he's got the stellar band, this rhythm section.
It's Tommy Aldridge, right?
Tommy Aldridge is going to crush on this song.
And Rudy Sarzo.
And Rudy Sarzo on the bass.
Dude, you know what? It's funny. I listened to this album probably not even maybe a month and a half ago. Just pulled it out
randomly.
Did
you really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you owned it.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah, dude. Dude.
Do you know it's called? It's called Talk of the Devil in the UK.
Well, because Speak of the Devil is improper English. You Yankee bastard.
Of course it is. So I'm trying to scare up a copy of the UK version so I have both. Talk of the Devil. This is a really impactful record for me because I would put this in my top 10 records of all time because it was such a revelation. Like at Louis Quintero's house that night, it was just like, this is the first time I heard Black Sabbath. This is all Black Sabbath songs.
Yeah.
There's no Ozzy songs.
No. This is fucking badass.
It's nothing but Sabbath.
Yeah.
And the imagery on the front cover where he's got jelly coming out of his mouth or whatever it is, and then the inside with the dwarf, the outside, the lettering, the font, and all of that stuff. It's like, what is this? This isn't insane. So it obviously had a big impact on me. And I mean, you know, looking back, I know what it is in the catalog. Look how awesome it
I'm
is.
I'm holding the album up. Look how awesome just grinning ear to ear.
Look how awesome it is. So let's get into a few of the details here. Of course, we know that there's a shit ton of overdubs on this record.
Well, sure there are, but that great live albums do that, don't
produced,
they?
Yes. Produced by Max Norman. And he claims that they recorded an entire show in the afternoon with no audience just to kind of get a safe
– like sort of sound checky and
sound
then-
check, which is no – I mean, Kiss fans, you know that's what Kiss Alive 2 is. You know,
sure.
I mean, for the most part. And so it's recorded, I should say, in September of 1982 at the Ritz in New York City. And there is some live – stuff in here because Ozzy's talking to the crowd and there's no way you're faking that, and we'll hear it because I'm gonna play the Wizard. And I'm playing the Wizard because A, it rocks, and Tommy Aldridge is killing it.
The whole band
but
is
B,
fucking on fire,
we
man.
Have to hear the intro of do y'all remember the Fillmore East Band. He's so drunk, it's so great.
This is a good time for metal.
It was such a great time for metal. You can hear some of the bootlegs on YouTube if you go out and search, you know, Speak of the Devil, Ozzy Osbourne. Everything's double tracked. So I'm not sure how Ozzy has two voice boxes to sing live. So it's obviously double tracked and edited in the studio, but I don't give a shit.
Well, there had to be
fifth grade Ryan did not give a shit about that.
No, think about put it in context at the time.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing record, and Tommy Aldridge is the MVP of this record.
Dude, two horns
Rudy
up.
Sarzo's crushing, mm-hmm. crushing it, and you know Brad Gillis. I know every note. I know every note that he plays on this record, and there's great moments. And actually, I will say that this song has the best pick scrape ever.
Yeah.
Because it's so short, and it's very short. And why is it there?
Yeah.
It's so great.
You have to point that out.
It's at the very end. If nobody will remember it, but. We'll reset it when
we
come back out.
We need to fill a shot glass, and as soon as we hear it, we drink, right? Just like, drink.
But he was in Night Ranger already. They were just waiting. They were finalizing their deal. And so he spent 1982 with Ozzy, and his first Night Ranger record comes out the week after this. So he's out. Rudy Sarzo's out because he's going to another band sounds like Slade.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's when Quiet Riot started right after that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. And then there's real quick before we drop the needle on the Wizard and the Fillmore East Man is Brad Gillis gets the gig because he's doing a cover band thing, playing heavy metal covers in and around L.A. Some guy walks in.
He's playing a fucking Sabbath tune, right?
And he's playing a Sabbath tune, and it's Pat Thrall's brother, who says, dude, you freaking killed that War Pigs or whatever it was that you played. I can probably get you an audition with Ozzy because he's looking for a guitar player. Pat Thrall's brother.
No
and
shit.
Why Pat Thrall? Because Pat Thrall played with?
Well, we played with Pat Travers.
Who was the drummer of Pat Travers?
Tommy Aldridge.
So there you go. So Pat Thrall's brother.
Wow, what a fucking.
Tells Pat Thrall.
So remember this, kids.
Who tells Tommy Aldridge.
It ain't always what you know.
Who tells Sharon.
It's who you know.
And next thing you know, you get an audition, and you're in the band, and you're making Speak of the Devil. All right, drop the needle on the Wizard. We have to hear all of the rap at the top of it and at the end of it. I love this record. It is one of my favorites in my top 10. I can't believe we haven't brought it before. Yeah. But it is side two. The last song on side two. I know that from way back when.
Cheers! We're going to do a number now, which I haven't done on stage since 1972. At the old Fillmore East. Does anyone remember the Fillmore East? Come on, let me hear it! For the old Fillmore East, man! We're music and shit-faced number 9, man! A few groupies, huh?
Jackson.
That Ozzy.
Who doesn't?
Oh, so great.
Gillis didn't have a lot of work to do on that one. Just playing those chords and riffs.
Still
and...
the best pick scrape ever. Meow. Miscellaneous. Meow.
One, two, three. Meow. On the four count. Quick and out. But Aldridge was killing it, man.
Oh, that is Tommy Aldridge with Holy Speak of the Devil. from 1982. Wow, I love that record so much. That is super nostalgic for me.
Left me breathless.
I love there. That. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that record.
It's a fun.
I mean, there's 100 things
fun.
Wrong with that record.
Well, but the record itself, the story behind it's a train wreck. What's about to happen? What is happening?
That's exactly.
But it was the coming together of this. It was sort of a lightning bolt. One point in time, boom, 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 and that happened. It's like, that's
thank glad God it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, the mystery boxes are officially empty here,
yes,
A.D. Adams.
They are indeed.
And we have wrapped everything up here on 117. Wow, what a show of heavy metal and somehow a Supreme song. Somehow that.
But that changed everything. It made everything fun again. We got heavy, heavy,
dark.
Heavy, heavier than dark, and it was like
we went out with
gospel.
A big party.
And then, yeah. So Ozzy, I think it paced itself well.
Ozzy wants us to party.
Yeah. And so
he loved that Supreme song. Yeah. Let's thank Liz Morgan for hanging out with us here tonight, running the controls.
Great job. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank
you very
much.
We might have a gig here. I don't know, man.
So.
Well, the pay is terrible, but it's fun.
It's fun.
We drink a lot.
Fireball.
Right? Yeah.
That's right. And thank you guys very much for hanging out with us here at Shabby Road week after week. We really appreciate that. It means a lot to us that you are posting stuff on Facebook or doing stuff on Twitter or just listening. We
Sharon and share alike.
Sharon Osbourne and share alike. That's right.
And don't forget to vote for the Shabbies now. We got some voting to
yes.
do. We got the Shabs coming up.
I keep
don't
forgetting
we?
To mention that. Yeah. You know, it's coming up in a couple of weeks. And if you go to our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and click on the tab that says vote, you may vote for the Shabby Awards. And wow, we've got a lot of votes already. I'm actually kind of surprised. And a lot of the nominees.
And wait till the gala.
My favorites are not getting through, I will tell you right now.
There are a few that I'm surprised
I know,
at.
And
I listen back and I go, that's fucking good.
I know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You guys are picking it this year.
Yeah.
The Shabby Awards are there. Go to the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and cast your vote today. I think we'll probably end up closing the voting in a couple weeks. So, yeah, please.
Yeah.
All right, well, I am looking across this ramshackle studio, and I'm actually comforted, because in here, no doubt we'd be safe in the event of a zombie apocalypse. After all, the smell in here would lead the zombies to believe that there's no humans in here, only other zombies. And most of all, there's clearly little or no brains in here, and I present to you Exhibit A, D. Adams.
Wow. That was well crafted, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you.
Well, I guess it's time to go, because two things. I'm out of rolling papers, and the only booze left is around the toilet, along with lunch. So
wow.
I know that's rather repulsive, but you know who's not so repulsive is my pal and co-host. Well, okay, occasionally repulsive. My pal and co-host, Ryan McKay.
Thank you for not saying my pal and co-host, Dick on the Bar.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. Nameonanything.com.